Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a lot of diversity in our show. We start with a conversation with Bill Malusian at the border. He's been there for Fox News for years, and now California's border is really in the spotlight. He joins us from the border in California. We talk with Dean Phillips, the Democratic presidential candidate, who is running against Joe Biden, claiming that he can't win because he's too old and that he's got a different approach. Interesting to talk to him as we're ahead of that March 5th primary. And also interesting to talk with Katie Porter, the congresswoman who is running for the U.S. Senate in a real tight matchup with Steve Garvey. But let's start things off with Bill Malusian. And first, here is some of Bill's reporting from the border.
China.
Georgia.
Ma'am, where are you from?
China.
Fox's Bill Malusian reporting from the California border community of Hakumba this week. Migration from China into the area up 500% this year. Bill Malusian joins us now from San Diego. Bill, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Hey, Alex, good to see you, man. Thanks for having me.
You have reported so much in Texas, now California in the spotlight. What are you seeing on the ground in our state?
So it's been interesting. In recent weeks, much of the illegal crossings have shifted away from Texas, right here to Southern California and in Arizona. What we're seeing here in San Diego sector is a huge surge of illegal immigration from countries all around the planet. I've met people here this week from China, from Kyrgyzstan, from Kazakhstan, from India, from Afghanistan, from Peru. Literally the whole world has been crossing here. It's the Chinese nationals, though, that have really been exploding, Alex. More than 21,000 Chinese nationals have crossed here in San Diego sector just since October 1st.
So why? What is it about China?
That's the golden question, and I wish I had an answer for you because we've been trying to find that out all week long. We've been talking to a lot of them as they come across. Obviously, there's a language barrier, but we use some of those translator apps. Most of them appear to be economic migrants wanting to come to the United States for better jobs and better work opportunities. We really haven't heard anybody claiming asylum. What's been interesting is groups of Chinese have told us how they got here. They flew into Turkey first, then they flew into Mexico, then they bust their way up to Tijuana, and then they just walked across the border without resistance.
California's Democratic governor, Gavin Newsom, couldn't be more different from Texas's Republican governor, Greg Abbott. And you see that in the policies on the ground. What's the big difference you actually see at the border in California versus Texas?
Oh, man. Polar opposites. When I'm in Texas, like specifically Eagle Pass, razor wire all over the place. National Guard, Texas DPS troopers. The federal government and Border Patrol have been kicked out of the area. Texas essentially locks it down with its own state military, and they will physically shove migrants back when they come to the river. Here in California, no razor wire, no National Guard, no troopers, no resistance of any kind whatsoever. They are free to just walk through or around the border wall. And once they get here, California is a sanctuary state. California offers all sorts of benefits to migrants who are undocumented. That includes, as recently as this year, offering taxpayer-funded health care benefits, health insurance to those who are undocumented here, Alex. So the approaches between the two states could not be more different.
And I know you reached out to California Governor Newsom's office about that, and they basically are blaming this on the Republicans for their lack of action with the border bill. You were out with California Republican Congressman Daryl Issa this week visiting the border in Hakumba. Here's some of what he told you.
My message to President Biden is close down the border based on the policy changes that have allowed this.
So we had that border bill. Republicans in the Senate and the House had a chance to pass a bill. It would have tightened asylum laws, sent more funds to the border. They killed the bill. You're there every day. You see this objectively. Would that bill have improved the situation and made the crisis not as bad?
Objectively speaking, there were multiple things in the bill that conservatives may not have liked, but overall, would it have improved the status quo down here? I believe the answer is yes, for a number of reasons. Number one, once you hit that 5,000 threshold, the border essentially shuts down and they reject all asylum claims in between ports of entry. Why is that such a big deal? Because the way it works right now is once migrants cross once they cross into the U.S., as soon as they step on U.S. soil, they are allowed to make an asylum claim. And that's when we get those mass releases with what's called an NTA, a notice to appear. And they're released into the U.S. with a court date many years into the future. There were other poison pills in it for Republicans, but look, they've got a one or two seat majority in the House right now. They don't have the Senate. They don't have the White House. Anytime there's compromise, neither side is going to like everything.
And there are, of course, legitimate asylum cases. I know you spoke to somebody from Mauritania who said that he is a gay man and he was trying to flee oppression there. In his country, you get stoned for being gay. That would be like a legitimate asylum case, right?
100%. Yeah, if that is the case and he's telling the truth, he sounds like he's got an airtight asylum case. And the problem for him is there's been so much asylum fraud down here at the border with predominantly economic migrants using asylum as their vehicle to get into the United States that the system is so backlogged by millions of people, it may take that guy from Mauritania years to finally see a judge, get in court, and get his asylum case resolved, Alex.
So it doesn't look like there's going to be a fix in Congress anytime soon. We know the president is looking into some potential executive actions. What could we realistically see at the border in the next few months to fix some of this?
And there are certain things President Biden can do at the executive level. Remember, like, essentially week one, day one, he reversed all of Trump's policies. If nothing is done, I believe this spring and summer, we're going to see the worst numbers yet, because that's been the case the last 3 years. We have the last 3 years as a record. Each year has set a new record. And once you get into those spring and summer months, the numbers shoot up like a rocket ship. And look, let's face it, right now, word on the street amongst the migrants around the world is they feel President Biden is much nicer at the border than President Trump was. And if they feel there's a chance that President Biden gets voted out of office later this year, I think more of them than ever are going to rush the border this year and think, I got to get in while I can.
Well, Bill Melusian, you have been on this for years, doing some of the best reporting in the country on this. Thank you for your tireless reporting. You can watch him on Fox News Channel and follow him in social media as well for some of the best info on this. Stay safe, my friend. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Alex. Good to see you.
Our thanks to Bill Melusian. We now go to a conversation with Dean Phillips, the Democrat running for president. But first, a little of President Biden here this week.
President Biden visiting CJ's Cafe in South L.A. this week with L.A. Mayor Karen Bass. He spent 3 days in the Golden State raising millions for his reelection campaign. He talked a lot about Trump during the trip, but didn't talk at all about the Democratic opponent he's currently running against. That's this guy. Dean Phillips is a Democratic congressman from Minnesota, challenging President Biden for the Democratic nomination. Welcome to The Issue
Is. It is good to be here.
So for folks that may not have seen you on that much media, because for some reason a lot of media aren't paying attention to you, who are you and why are you doing this?
Who am I and why am I doing this? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm a father, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a Gold Star son. I lost my dad in the Vietnam War when I was 6 months old. And I got lucky because when my dad was killed, my mom was 24 and widowed, and she remarried a wonderful man 3 years later, and I was adopted into a great family. And I don't think it should be a stroke of good luck or being born in the right zip code in America that determines where you end up. And I'm watching the 2016 election with my family after a career in business, Belvedere Vodka, Talenti Gelato. At least I know what Americans like, I gotta tell you, Alex. And I'm watching the 2016
alcohol
election.
And ice cream.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm watching the 2016 election, and probably like most of those in California watching this right now, I was shocked. I was shocked by the outcome. I'd taken it for granted. I thought our government was in good hands. I thought our country was in good hands. But what really jarred me is waking up the next morning to the sound of my youngest daughter crying in her bedroom. She was 16. She had just overcome Hodgkin's lymphoma. She's a gay woman. I didn't know that when she was 16. But I saw fear in her eyes that changed me as a father. I promised my two daughters at the breakfast table that morning I would do something. And I ran for Congress. I flipped a district in Minnesota that had not elected a Democrat since 1958, beat a guy who had won by 14 points, by 12, flipped it by 26, and got to Congress thinking we could change things, only to discover that it is so utterly dysfunctional, but so fixable. And that means we got to work together. And I ran for Congress to resist Donald Trump. I was trapped in the House chamber on January 6th because of Donald Trump. And he's returning to the White House this November because Joe Biden cannot beat him. And in the absence of anybody with the courage to stand up with more name recognition than I to run in this race, your own governor, Vice President Harris, Gretchen Whitmer, many others, someone had to do it. The president wouldn't step aside, others wouldn't enter the stage, and in America, when it's time to meet the moment, somebody has got to do so, and that's why I'm doing this. And it's been a joyful, optimistic, very hopeful journey, and I just simply am glad to be introduced to people because in the absence of platform, it ain't easy.
So why are you convinced that he can't win? Because if you look at a lot of the polls, it's really competitive right now. There are scenarios where Trump is ahead, but I mean, it's close. Why are you so confident that he can't pull this off?
Well, Alex, it's only close on a national basis. Maybe a couple points Trump, a couple points Biden. But we have an electoral college. We have seven battleground states in which Joe Biden is losing in every single one right now. He was never behind in 2020. He's losing in every one right now. And his approval numbers are literally at historic lows as measured in this last century. 5 points behind where Trump was at the same time, 18 points below where Jimmy Carter was in January of 1980. Presidents don't recover from that. The worst is what people are seeing on their screens. He's a good man. I respect the president. I campaign for him. I pass his legislation. I admire him. He was probably the only Democrat that could win in 2020. He is probably one of the only ones that will lose in 2024. That's what the data says. His decline is real. And the more he's encapsulated and kept from the public, the more people are going to realize they'd rather side with a strong man who lacks character and competency than a man in decline. And that's the problem right now.
Is there any policy difference between you and President Biden? Is there anything you do differently in the job, or is it mostly just a style and you're younger?
Well, that is an element. Yeah. I'm another generation. I'd be the first Gen X president in the United States history. I was not born in the 40s. I was born in 1969. I have a different worldview. As a son who lost a father in the Vietnam War, a meaningless, disastrous war for both the U.S. and Vietnam, I believe in peace. I believe America should lead with peace. I'm a Democrat who will tell you the southern border is an unmitigated disaster. You know that in California. It's embarrassing. It's unmitigated. It's inexcusable. And Democrats should own it. It's been so for decades. I believe in something called American Dream Accounts, where we should be investing in kids in ways we've never done before in this country. $5,000 in an investment account to every baby born in America. It would grow over time. In high school and elementary school, they'd have an app on their phone to follow their portfolio. They'd learn entrepreneurship, financial management. And then as an incentive to graduate high school, these kids would get a $20,000 nest egg to start their lives, become owners of this economy, help repair injustices of the past, reduce our social safety nets. And in California, you spend $100,000 per capita on inmates, everybody incarcerated in the state, $100,000. Why are we not a country that takes a little bit of that money, invests in kids upstream so that we save money and save lives downstream? Joe Biden, a good man. Donald Trump, not a good man. These are not people who are going to be able to address the issues facing the future. Artificial intelligence, the disruption to our economy, social media regulation, war and peace around the world. It's time for new leadership, new generation, and new perspectives.
I mean, you've talked about the polls with Joe Biden, and the polls for you are pretty tough. I mean, there was voting in South Carolina. He got 96% of the vote. There's a poll we want to show, an Emerson poll of California voters of Democrats. We got the primary in people voting now.
Sure.
Joe Biden at 75, you at 9. What is the path for victory? Yeah. And if there isn't a path for victory, is there a moment where you say, me being in this race is hurting the eventual Democratic nominee?
First of all, the only person making it easier for Donald Trump right now is Joe Biden. He made a terrible mistake to run again. He implied years ago that he'd serve one term. All of my colleagues in Congress expected that. He's preventing a whole new generation of Democrats from rising, having an energetic, thoughtful competition that creates energy and excitement. And the polls for an unknown member of Congress, by the way, it's easy to become known in politics right now. You just got to be a total jerk. Think about it. Yeah. I was the vice chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus. I was a member of the House Democratic Leadership Team. I'm a workhorse, not a show horse. And it's not surprising that people don't know my name yet. Plus, we have a Democratic Party that is not wanting competition, that is deplatforming, limiting ballot access. So to answer your question directly, my intention is to accrue delegates, and I will. I got 20% in New Hampshire. But I'm introducing myself to the country, and it is my belief that come June, July, when we have head-to-head polls, me against Donald Trump, Joe Biden against Donald Trump, the country will see we can either coronate a candidate of the past who's going to lose, or we can nominate a candidate for the future who can win. and work in a common sense, bipartisan, reasonable fashion that the country desperately needs right now. So that's my contention, is get to know me, I'll get to know you, we'll see what happens come August.
So you stay in this until August, is what you say?
Have to. This is a campaign of principle.
Yeah.
It's to demonstrate to our children and their children that in America, you got to meet the moment. Mm-hmm. Don't let a political party tell you what you have to do. Don't stand in line. Don't be quiet. Don't shut up. Do just the opposite. And that's what I'm doing.
What's the sort of meanest thing that somebody said to you behind the scenes?
Well, behind the scenes, I probably don't know. You know, I'll tell you, Alex, I was a darling 4 months ago amongst my colleagues. To some, I become the devil for simply having the audacity to practice democracy. I am a thoughtful, reasonable, decent, compassionate, strong person. When people accuse me of things very personal, it troubles me. There have been some that have tried to attack me in very personal ways that you know, anybody who's a human being would be affected by. But that also comes with the territory. And the fact of the matter is, I think people are more upset with themselves right now for being so focused on self-preservation and not focused on principle that I'm an easy attack line.
You mentioned Governor Newsom. Do you mm-hmm. think he's a coward for not running?
I don't think he's a coward, but I got to tell you, he's campaigning as hard as I am. And I would just say, why not, Mr. Governor, enter the race? In fact, I saw him in South Carolina. He's a very able leader, obviously. I don't believe he can win a national election, but that's beside the point. Yes, I wish he had entered the race. I told him when I saw him in South Carolina that mm-hmm. he should have entered the race, because that would have demonstrated the kind of person, the kind of party that we should be, and I wish he had taken that step.
And what did he say to you?
He smiled.
Yeah, that was that.
He smiled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you made a little bit of news this week. You talked about this idea that you may be open to running on a unity ticket with Nikki Haley, with you both running for president and vice president. Mm-hmm. Why is that? How would that work?
Well, first of all, I'm a proud Democrat, and that's why I'm running as a Democrat. I'm not running as an independent. I'm not Cornel West or Jill Stein or RFK Jr. I want to try to reform our party from the inside and demonstrate possibility. With all that said, my mission is to defeat Donald Trump. Joe Biden will not, in my estimation. So I think it's smart for all of us to keep our hearts and minds open to other ways that we might accomplish that. Nikki Haley and I are the last two people standing between a Trump and Biden rematch. 70% of the country doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. 86% of the country believes that Joe Biden is too old to serve until 2029. So what I said yesterday in that radio interview is, if the country was interested in a unity ticket, one Democrat, one Republican, reasonable, common sense, willing to work together to demonstrate what this country is capable of, why wouldn't I consider that? And frankly, why wouldn't she? But at the end of the day, I will not do anything that makes it easier for Donald Trump to return to the White House. I will only try to defeat him.
Who's president? Who's vice president in that scenario?
I think the truth is, I mean, if you're being objective, you'd need someone to peel votes from the Republican nominee, who's going to be Donald Trump, and that would probably put her in the top of the ticket and probably me as VP. And by the way, whatever role I can serve, generic Democrat, VP, outside instigator, someone has to wake this country up to reality. But most importantly, Alex, I would encourage people to vote in the primary.
Yeah.
It's not about me. It's not about Nikki Haley. It's not about Donald Trump or Joe Biden. It's about people getting out of their homes or using your mail to vote in primary elections. We're turning the country over to the far right and the far left, and the power is still in the hands of people if we execute it.
So you think that running as Nikki Haley's vice president is more helpful to the country than supporting Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee?
Well, the data says Joe Biden can't win. That's my contention. People can look objectively at it. Now, MSNBC will tell you something differently. MSNBC has only had me on once in 4 months.
Yeah.
They don't want to introduce me to the country. So if you listen to MSNBC, Twitter world, you would think that Joe Biden is positioned to win. Well, he's not. He's going to lose. So if me being on another ticket would help defeat him, by all means would I consider it. But no, right now I'm running to make the case first to Democrats that we have an alternative that I think will be better positioned to win. That's what I'm going to do first. And all I'm saying is we should all keep our hearts and minds open to potential ways to defeat him if it's clear that Joe Biden can't.
Very interesting. So here on our show, we do something fun called Personal Issues. This is rapid fire, 30-second get to know you, because we got to get to know you, right? That's the point of this. So these are cultural favorites. First thing that comes to mind, sort of one-word answers. All right, ready? What's your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show was The Odd Couple.
Ooh, favorite movie?
We're talking about VP and president.
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption.
Okay. Favorite book?
Favorite book is 1776.
Very nice.
And Knight, and L.U.B. Sells Knight.
Favorite musical artist or band?
The Replacements.
Who's your favorite athlete?
My favorite athlete is still Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Got it. Even though I'm a Minnesotan, that's really hard to say about a Chicago Bull. But yeah, Michael Jordan.
Who's your role model?
My role model is my mother. My mother is an extraordinary survivor. Lost her husband, my dad, in Vietnam. Remarried a wonderful guy, an entrepreneur herself, a woman of compassion and strength and decency. Taught me about business, taught me about life, and someone that I look up to every single day.
So we always end with music on this show, and so we thought, why not end with your music?
Oh, so with my music?
This is you singing Shallow. What's the story with this?
Okay, so my wife, Annalise, is a trained musician, went to school in L.A., a vocalist, and we do a little bit of, this is at our farm in Virginia. I love it.
Very nice.
Now, she's the talent. Yeah. I'm obviously the politician.
From Dean Phillips, one Democratic member of Congress who's about to leave the House, to another Democratic member of Congress that's about to leave the House, Katie Porter, who, of course, is running for Senate and was part of a Senate debate this week.
There is a candidate on this stage who has done that again and again, getting earmarks for his private corporate donors.
This week, Katie Porter taking on Adam Schiff on NBC, the third and final U.S. Senate debate. Here is the latest poll from PPIC. It shows Schiff solidly in first at 24%, but Porter and Republican Steve Garvey statistically tied for second place, with Democrat Barbara Lee significantly behind them. Congresswoman Katie Porter joins us now from her campaign headquarters in Irvine. Congresswoman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Great to be here again.
How do you see the state of the race in the final days?
We have a lot of folks who have not yet voted. I think one of the most important messages to get out is that the election is just 11 days away. And so people need to vote by March 5th to make their voices heard, to participate in deciding who should be our next senator. I think one of the things I have to offer California is that I'm very focused on our future. I'm focused on what we need to do to meet our biggest challenges, not on kind of the status quo, because in my time in California, we've seen housing affordability get worse. We haven't made the progress we need to on climate, our rights being under attack. And so it's really a campaign, I think, in our case, about shaking up Washington, about doing things differently, not having more of the same from career politicians, including corporate PAC money.
All right, so the different newspapers have made their endorsements. The LA Times editorial page endorsed Schiff, the Sacramento Bee endorsed Lee, and the San Francisco Chronicle endorsed you. Here's a look at the title of that article. It says, Katie Porter deserves to make her case for Senate to California voters in November. Can you compare what a Schiff-Garvey matchup looks like for our state versus a Schiff-Porter matchup in November? What does that look like for Californians?
Well, a Schiff-Porter matchup, that is having two of us go through, will guarantee a competitive debate, a competitive election all the way through November. What does that mean to regular Californians? It means that their future senator will be talking about the issues that matter to them, will be traveling the state, will be listening to Californians, talking to small business owners, nonprofits, focusing on the issues that are challenging us, including homelessness, crime, border security. If it's a Schiff-Garvey matchup, the race is basically over on March 5th, and I think that is really bad for California, and it's really bad for little d democracy. We do best when we have competitive elections, and it's really disappointing that Representative Schiff is spending millions and millions of dollars trying to end this election before November.
Although, wouldn't Republicans like to have somebody in the race? It's good for them.
I'm sure Republicans would like to have somebody in the race, but I think what we're seeing here is Republicans are not spending to put Steve Garvey on air. The only competitive the TV ads we've seen, the only communications from Steve Garvey to voters are coming from Democrat Adam Schiff. And so I think that should show voters what they need to know about what the strategy really is here. It's about taking the best qualified woman who's competitive in the race, who could win in November, off the ballot. And I don't think that's what someone who's a self-styled defender of democracy like Representative Schiff should be doing at this point.
Well, and there's no doubt that he has spent millions of dollars doing this. His super PACs have spent millions of dollars doing that. There's probably an ad doing that airing in this show, I'm sure. Let's look at, you know, one of the ads. You've called this whole thing a cynical political strategy to essentially lift up a Republican that he thinks he can beat. But you now are lifting up Republican candidate Eric Early. And yes, it's true. He is definitely a bigger Trump supporter than Steve Garvey is. But isn't this whole thing, this idea of lifting up Republicans like this, just kind of the consultant-driven, same old political Washington stuff that you say is wrong with the whole system?
Well, our advertising and our campaign, our voter engagement has consistently been throughout this campaign, largely positive, talking about me, talking about what I've done, standing up to big corporations, delivering free COVID tests, fighting big oil and big polluters, addressing the cost of living. And I think what you see from Representative Schiff is that his positive messaging isn't moving the needle. And so what he's doing instead is trying to lift up a Republican. And make no mistake, having Steve Garvey on the ballot is a boon to Republicans, if not in this Senate race, certainly down ballot. They want to be able to trot out Steve Garvey. He can sign a few baseballs and say he doesn't know what he thinks about any policy position or what he'll do about any problem. And that's a boost for the Republican Party. That's not what Adam Schiff or any Democrat who wants to represent the state of California with our values should be doing at this point.
But why spend your money lifting up Eric Early?
Well, the truth is, if Representative Schiff thinks that voters should know about the threats to California and about the threats from the Republican Party, then the truth is Eric Early is representative of Donald Trump's values. He is representative of the values of down-ballot Republicans. He strongly, vehemently supports a nationwide abortion ban with no exceptions. He has said he will strike down and fight any attempts to reduce gun violence, and that he is MAGA 100% Donald Trump. That's, if we have a Republican on the ballot, whether it's Garvey or Early, that's what's at stake, is Eric Early's values and positions. And I want to remind Californians, that's why we need two Democrats on the ballot going into November.
One of the big issues of this week is what's happening at the border. We've seen a real influx even at the California border now. What do you think needs to be done on that front? And why did you think that the bipartisan effort to fix this was the wrong way to go? Only five Democrats were against that.
Well, so I think two things. One, every time we hear this conversation about a complete closure of the border, about shutting it all down, what that does is just surge migration. It's actually backwards from what we should be doing, which is having a lawful, orderly, humane system where people can understand the process and they know what they need to demonstrate and to prove and when they need to apply and how long they might need to wait in order to come to this country. With regard to the border bill, look, it was shot down in the Senate, and including California Senator Alex Padilla, who has been really a hero in lifting up all the issues we face with regard with immigration, was a strong no on it. The work here needs to be done by Congress to recognize the stone-cold truth, which is that we need immigrants. We need them to be our next generation of doctors and caregivers and pharmacists and farm workers. And so our economy in California will not grow if we are losing people. So that means both bringing down the cost of housing and the cost of living of California to keep folks here, but also recognizing that with business and labor facing so many shortages, we need immigrants, not to demonize them.
You know, you just wrapped up the third and final debate, so you've gotten used to talking in short phrases. You know, of the three debates, which was your favorite? No, don't answer that.
The first one with Alex's host, obviously. Yeah. I really do think it was terrific. Thank you so much for your work.
I'm just kidding with that. But the point being, though, I didn't give you in that debate an opportunity to make a closing statement, but I want to give you that opportunity now. But let's keep it quick. So, like, 15 seconds, what is your last pitch to California voters?
This Senate race is our opportunity to make sure that California's problems get solved in Washington. More of the same has not brought better lives and better livelihoods to Californians. I am running to shake things up, to do it differently, to put Californians ahead of big corporations.
You know, I got to give you credit because in the first debate, you were one of the only people that stuck to time. And your colleagues did not.
The only, I think you're looking for the word only.
The only one that stuck to time. So your colleagues all went long, so I didn't get to do my personal issues shtick that I wanted to do during the end of the debate. But I want to do it with you now. So these were the questions we were going to ask during the debate if we didn't run out of time. So this is a little bit of fun. 30 seconds on the clock. What is the last TV show that you binged?
Oh, I've been watching The Tourist, and it's terrific.
What is your favorite karaoke song?
Bejeweled by Taylor Swift. I like the line, I did all the extra credit and got graded on a curve. And also the line, I think it's time to teach some lessons.
Who would play you in a biopic?
I don't know. I'm a big Amy Schumer fan. I thought she just, the latest publicity around her was terrific.
And we learned that Star Wars is your favorite movie. What is your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, Chewbacca. Because I think often, particularly in politics, things you say get distorted. People can't understand your message. So he's just a great warrior for good in those movies.
So Katie Porter is the Chewbacca of California politics. I love that.
Our thanks to Congresswoman Porter, to Congressman Dean Phillips, to Bill Malusian, and to you for listening. Next week, our final show before the March 5th primary, a reminder to vote. You should have your ballot by now. Vote centers are opening up around California. It's important to get out there and make your voice heard. I'm Alex Michelson. Thank you again for listening. Hope you'll follow me in social media. Hope you will like and subscribe to this show and let other people know about it. A little engine that could without much of an advertising budget or no advertising budget. And so you talking to your friends about it is the way that we spread the word. Thank you so much. See you next week.